Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Big Sell when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, it was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai. Well, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season and multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, President Bush said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, and God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money or the wealth is in private business. It's in sales. It's not in public business, and it's not in jobs or employment. And that's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of that old covenant contract and to get those benefits paid in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's property, real property, instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults. And while you're at it, order our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's free of charge. It's informative. It's entertaining. It's educational. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Let you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about the Big Sell. The Big Sell. Things that sell well aren't necessarily things that you want, need, or can use. Oftentimes, people buy things, you know, that they don't want, can't use, shouldn't have, and are really bad for them. Cancer is one of those. We buy cancer every day. We love it. You buy cigarettes, and you all know that cigarettes cause lung cancer. There isn't anybody out there that doesn't know that, whether it's true or false. It's irrelevant, but you know that. Now, we all drink fluoride in our water. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, but, you know, most people in the country drink fluoride. It's a toxic poison, but you believe that it prevents tooth decay, but you don't know what else it does to you. You haven't figured that one out yet. Selling cholesterol is beneficial as a nutrient. Cholesterol. See, you've heard that cholesterol is bad for you, but it's a vital nutrient. And so you're avoiding cholesterol, like the plague, which is a vital nutrient, but you are consuming fluoride, which is a deadly toxin, believing that it's good for you, good for your teeth. I pointed this out the other day. Now, there are other big lies out there that come under this thing I call the Big Sell. And I guess the bigger the lie, the easier it is to sell it. Because today we're selling the stimulus package. It always reminds me, a guy goes down to a whorehouse, he picks up a dose of clap, and now he's got VD. And the guy that has VD, I've never heard of anybody saying, I think what I'll do is go to the whorehouse and look for a cure. When a guy's got VD, he goes to the doctor to get penicillin to cure the VD that he got down at the whorehouse. But that isn't the way economics works. You see, in economics, when you have a bunch of banks that go bankrupt, make a lot of bad loans, you don't let those banks go bankrupt. You go to the taxpayers and collect a lot of money and give it to those failed institutions so that they can do more of it. Isn't that special? The other day I saw another little story that caught my eye. General Motors, remember the big American auto company that's going bankrupt? Well, they went to Congress and they said, hey, give us some money. And so George Bush and company gave them some money. I don't think they've got all the money that they wanted. I think they wanted around $50 billion for GM and Chrysler. But they gave them some. I think they gave them $9 billion or $20 or something like that. They gave them a portion of it. What do you think General Motors did with a portion of their taxpayer bailed out money? Well, listen to this. General Motors took $1 billion the other day, just in the last week, and they invested it in Brazil. That's right. General Motors invested $1 billion in Brazil. What for? Well, it was to shore up their failing auto company in Brazil. So what they're doing is taking U.S. taxpayer dollars out of the United States, investing it in another country in their auto operations in in Brazil. They also have taken their money and invested it in China, which doesn't do us any good. So what I would like to see is, well, why doesn't the Brazilian government give them the $1 billion down in Brazil so that they can invest in Brazilian auto plants for Brazilian workers? Okay. Now, a lot of this stuff that's going on here is just lies. You know, they lie to us constantly. But here's the best part about it. You believe it. Hell, we just swallow that hook, line, and sinker, you know, as a nation, as a group. Now, here's Ocean Currents Fueled Active 2008 Hurricane Season. So I picked up a newsletter here. It's called the Environment and Climate News, and it's put out by the Heartland Institute. And their thing in life is the environment. They are environmentalists. On the other side, you know, the opposite side of the Sierra Club and the Greenies and the others over here. And they're asking questions like, well, if global warming is true, then are the statements that this global warming is causing more and more violent hurricanes? What do you think? I mean, before we start the conversation today, why don't you write down on a piece of paper, what do you believe is causing this great outbreak of hurricanes like Katrina and Rita that we've seen in the past, you know, a few years, last 10 or 15 years? Do you think it's global warming? Do you think it's carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? What do you think is causing that? Let me ask you this. Do you think there has been an increase in hurricanes over, say, the last 50 years? Have you heard that there are increases in hurricane activity? Isn't that these hurricane activities that have been increasing over the past 50 years or so, or 100 years, are becoming bigger and bigger and more violent? And, you know, you know what you've heard, and I know what I've heard, and I know what's in my brain. Now, what do you think is in your brain? Well, here's a think tank called the Heartland Institute, and they've got the facts here in front of us. See? And what they did, they went to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, or agency, and they said, hey, let's go back in 1900 to 1949. That's a 50-year period there. And tell us how many named storms have there been. How many hurricanes in that 50-year period? And how many of those hurricanes from 1900 to 1949 were Category 3, 4, or 5? You know, the monster storms? And during this 100-year period, from 1900 to 2008, a little over 100 years, tell us how much the average global warming has been. All right, did you get that number, Dan? If you got a pen and paper there, we're going to go from 1900 to 2008. There's two periods of time here divided into 50-year periods. Okay. So you got 1900 to 1949 and 1959 to 2008. How many named storms were there? How many of those named storms were hurricanes? And then how many of those hurricanes equaled 3, 4, or 5, you know, the monster storms like Hurricane Katrina? And how much has the temperature increased over that 100 years? That's the question. I'm not going to give you the answer right now. You mull that one over in your brain, and we're going to run through the story here. Tropical storm activity during the 2008 hurricane season was well above average. Now, my colleague Phil Klotzbach and I were very happy to foresee and to provide advance notice of this above-average activity, as did the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's seasonal hurricane forecast. Although this is my 25th year of making these seasonal forecasts, Klotzbach should get most of the credit for the success of this year's forecast. Now, here's the headline. It says, CO2 is not affecting hurricanes. Now, how many of you thought that CO2, that's carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, is affecting these hurricanes? Is it affecting global warming? Is there global warming? And if there is global warming, is the global warming being caused by CO2? Or is it being caused by something else? And how much is the global warming? And how much out of character is global warming over the past century? Has anybody ever put any numbers together that go back 100, 500, 1,000 years or something like that? Well, the answer to that is yes. You know, there's tree rings and there's ice core samples and there's numbers and there's facts and figures out there. I'm not really sure that the average Joe Sixpack on the street gets those numbers. I know what we get in USA Today, and I know what I hear by Katie Couric and Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson. But are the numbers that are coming out of the news media accurate and correct? So CO2 is not affecting hurricanes. Now here's that part of the story. After his election victory, President-elect Barack Obama said that storms are growing stronger with each passing hurricane season. Now this is our president. Now, the president, here's a quotation alleged to have come from our president's lips. He said, storms are growing stronger with each passing hurricane season. This implies, then, that this is due to increases in atmospheric carbon dioxide. And he was repeating what Al Gore has been saying for years, and what was implied by thousands of media reports after the damaging Atlantic season of 2004 and 2005. Yes, The Atlantic has seen a very large increase in major hurricanes during the 14-year period of 1995 to 2008 in comparison with the prior 25-year period of 1970 through 1994. But rising levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide have not in any way been responsible for the recent upswing in Atlantic Basin major hurricanes since 1995. Now, I agree with many of my colleagues, including the large increase in Atlantic major hurricanes is primarily due to the multi-decade increase in the Atlantic Ocean thermohaline circulation, also known as THC, that is driven by Atlantic salinity variations. These multi-decade Atlantic changes also have been termed the Atlantic multicedinal oscillation, also known as AMO. They are not a result of global surface temperatures or increases in atmospheric carbon dioxide. Okay, now here's an official from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says they are not a result of global surface temperatures or increases in atmospheric carbon dioxide. Let's think about this carbon dioxide here for a moment. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but in amber samples that have been taken out of prehistoric samples of amber, there are bubbles of air that were captured in those. You know, they're old. We don't know exactly how old they are, but they go back to Noah's flood, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years old. And in these amber samples, they take those air bubbles and then they capture the air. They'll drill a hole in there and then they'll capture that air in there and then they'll analyze it and see, well, what's the oxygen content of this ancient atmospheric air? What's the carbon dioxide level? All right, and so they do that and they find out that the atmosphere's oxygen level was 36%. So I'm going to write number 24 down here. It's 36% oxygen. Did you know that? Okay, I just wanted to point that out to you. Okay, and that the carbon dioxide level is also double what it is today. Now, the level today is about one-half, it's number 25 here, one-half of 1%. So it was about 1% back here in ancient times. Now, let's go to the fossil record. When you look at the fossil record and you look at the size of animals, you know, like dinosaurs, I mean, those were some big critters. They're as big as whales are today. You get these big whales out there weigh 50 tons. And a lot of those dinosaurs weighed 50 tons. And they were breathing oxygen, and they died out. So a question arises, well, when did they die out, and what did they die from? So for those of us that subscribe to the Ten Commandment model and the special creation, we go back to dinosaurs then were created about 6,000 years ago and lived from in the Garden of Eden forward until they died out at Noah's flood. Noah more than likely took some dinosaurs with him on the ark and saved them alive to this side of the flood. But here's what's happened. The oxygen content has dropped from 36% prior to the flood to 21% today. And if you'll take a look at the size of animals today, they're much smaller than they were in that pre-flood era. Now take a look at the size of the plants. When we look at prehistoric plants compared to today, same plants, they're humongous back in the pre-flood period, and they're much smaller today. They've got half as much air to breathe. All right, let's mull that one over for a second. If you have less air to breathe, less oxygen, then you're not going to perform as well as you would if you had more of it. And the same thing is true with plants. In experiments today, when you take plants, put them inside of a container, and then flood them with carbon dioxide, they get bigger. They grow better. And that's because there's a symbiotic relationship now between the atmosphere and plants and the atmosphere and humans. And in some locations around the world, when smog gets bad or when air pollution gets bad, the oxygen content of the air drops. It can drop to as low as 8 or 10%. 8 or 10%. Think about that. Now you're living in downtown Cleveland, and you get a big smog attack, or there's some an air inversion. And you're consuming oxygen here in the city, burning it up in automobiles and so on. How does that oxygen get replaced? It gets replaced by the oxygen that is given off by plants. When you learned that when you went to high school, didn't you? And then the plants, you see, they breathe in the carbon dioxide that animals give off. You know, when we breathe in oxygen, we convert that to carbon dioxide. And so, you know, the animals are making the air for the plants to breathe, and the plants are making the air for the humans to breathe and the animals to breathe and so on. You heard that story, haven't you? Okay, now here's what you might not have heard before. Prior to the flood, the oxygen content was 36%, and then the carbon dioxide content was 1%. Today, the carbon dioxide is one-half that. And the oxygen didn't drop by half. It didn't drop to 18%, but it's at 21%. Almost half, but not quite. We got a little bit more oxygen than we did carbon dioxide. All right, now here's the guy says they are not a result of global surface temperatures or increases in atmospheric carbon dioxide. So what's causing it? Guess a normal long-term trend. And although global surface temperatures have increased over the past century, There are now many observational studies indicating there has not been any significant long-term increase in hurricane frequency or intensity in any of the world's tropical cyclone basins. Okay, I'll read that to you again. Now, contrary to President Barack Obama, who said, now remember, storms are growing stronger with each passing hurricane season. That's the impression that all of us get reading USA Today and listening to Katie Couric and the news media and so on. But is it true or is it a big sell? And if so, who's selling what and who's buying it and what's the dollar figure that's coming out of it? Now, I'm not going to stop this. I mean, I'm not here telling you to write a letter to your senator and let's put an end to global warming. Come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. As a reporter, I'm trying to analyze this to figure out, well, what's my next move? How much more tax do I want to pay to support global warming? Or should I just back out of this thing and let you guys go out here and pay for more global warming? You know, sometimes it's good, you know, to sit on the sidelines and watch the rest of the investors lose their money. Now, somebody's going to make money off of global warming, and that's the purpose for the big sell. We had this thing come up not too far back here. It was called the CFCs. I forgot the exact wording for it. It was chlorinated hydrocarbons or something. Anyway, it was the gas that you have in your car's in your air conditioning systems. And they said, oh my God, this stuff is causing holes in the atmosphere, and so we got to ban this stuff. Well, for the guy that's got the air conditioner, and now we've got to ban your air conditioner, and we got to buy a new one. We got to have new gases to put in here. Well, somebody made a lot of money off of that deal, didn't they? Now, you know, it's academic to me. I've got a refrigerator, and my new refrigerator has a different gas in it than the gas that was in it before. And hell, maybe they told us the truth, and maybe this CFC over here was bad stuff and so on. But did you notice that every time one of these deals comes up over here, my God, there's just billions and billions of dollars changing hands here. And we're watching this right now. It's unfolding right in front of your eyeballs, and I reported it to you yesterday. We are going to convert, here in America, we are going to convert all of our power plants from coal to wind power, solar power, and other green modalities. Now, that's going to cost a lot of money. I mean, you know, we're going to pay for that. Every damn dollar you and I are going to pay for it, we're going to pay for it every month when we pay our electric bill. That's where reality is at. So somebody's going to make a lot of money. The people who are making those wind turbines are making money. Now, we have a 600-year supply of coal. I just wanted to let you know that. A 600-year supply of coal. So we're not about to run out of electricity. But it's dirty fuel. And these guys say, well, my God, when you burn that coal, you put this carbon dioxide in the air. Well, what's the use of carbon dioxide? Well, it's what the plants breathe. Plants. And the more carbon dioxide that there is available to the plant, the bigger the plant grows. Is that bad? Well, it causes hurricanes. Does it? How do you know that? I know that's what you heard. That's what you've been told. But is that really true? Does it cause hurricanes? Does it cause more violent hurricanes? Now, there's a thing called global warming going on here, and it's been ascribed to carbon dioxide. Let's suppose that there's a thing called global warming going on, but carbon dioxide has nothing to do with it. Well, then burning coal doesn't have anything to do with global warming, because they're telling us that the global warming is caused by the carbon dioxide. See? So, you know, I'm not a scientist, and I'm not here to tell you that I'm some great authority and you need to listen to me, but I'm an old-timey salesman. I'm a con man. I'm a professional con man. So when I'm listening to somebody put the con on me, I'm alerted to the fact that, hey, who's getting paid what here? You know, who's getting paid for this? Now, maybe I'm conning you. So you can sit there and say, well, come on, Gordon, you're just conning me into believing that. Well, then I'm not getting paid very much for it. But the guy that's making that wind turbine, now he's actually getting paid. He's getting some money for that. And I'm not telling you that electricity that's generated by solar panels, I've got solar panels and I've got wind turbines up on my tower. I generate electricity right here on the farm. And I do it with wind power, and I do it with solar power. I'm all in favor of wind and solar power. What I'm suspicious of is who's selling this to me. Because, see, this wind power is going to cost me 25% more. Now, that's what they're telling me. And they always underestimate it and lie to me, so it's going to cost me probably 50%, maybe double. So I'm paying $2,500 a year for power here, and now they're telling me my power is going to go up to, you know, $3,500, $4,000, maybe even $5,000 a year. So I'm going to be paying a lot more money. I'm going to get more solar, and I'm going to get more wind. I hear you. Whether I want it or not, that's what I'm going to get. What I'm trying to figure out is, well, who's making the money and who's lying to me? Is it the coal people? Now, the people that are delivering the electricity here today, they got a big power plant up here in Springfield, and it's coal-fired power. And here in Missouri, the wind doesn't blow very well. Now, out in Nebraska and North and South Dakota, and there's places around the country that they get a lot of wind, and it makes it viable. But as I reported to you yesterday, when the state of Minnesota said, okay, well, we'll take on this environmentally green power idea over here, but we have to buy this electric power generated by windmills from North Dakota because that's where the wind blows. So we got to have a 700-mile transmission line, and then the greenies go ballistic on them and say, no, no, we can't build this power line because you guys might deliver coal-fired electricity through those lines. And I'm sitting here saying, what the hell kind of insanity is this? What the hell difference does it make to me whether this electricity is coal or whether it's wind or whether it's solar or tidal or whatever? I mean, I'm the consumer and I want to buy it. And we've exceeded to your demands. We're gonna build all this wind power up here. So I don't care if they transmit mixed power. Is there some difference in your electric bill, or is there some difference in the quality of light that you get, or the heat that you get, or the service that you get because the electricity that you're buying comes from a coal-fired plant or it comes from a wind generator? Huh? Come on, wake up here. Doesn't make any difference to me one way or the other. So if government wants to phase out coal and phase in wind, my common sense tells me that don't we have to build the wind generators where the wind blows? I mean, does that make sense to you? The wind blows in North Dakota, but it doesn't blow in Minnesota and Missouri. So if we're going to get wind power here, we've got to put these generators out here where the wind's blowing, you know, like for us here, over in Oklahoma. It blows over in Oklahoma and up in the Texas Panhandle and so on. That's where you need to build these wind generators. It's where the wind blows, and then transmit that power over to us, and then slowly over time shut down the coal-fired power plants. I could see that over a period of time. But you see, I showed you yesterday, the greenies have some other kind of an agenda. We haven't identified what their agenda is, but it sure as hell doesn't have anything to do with delivering electricity now. So let's wake up and smell that pot of coffee. And I got to give you a reminder here before we get on with these hurricanes. Now remember our question here, and we're going to answer here today. Over the period of time from 1900 to 2008, that's a 100-year period, in the first 50 years, 1900 to 1949, we're trying to figure out the named storms, the number of hurricanes, and the intensity of those hurricanes. How many 3, 4, and 5 hurricanes in that first 50 years compared to the second 50 years from 1959 to 2008? Now, the temperature over that 100-year period rose an average of 4/10 of 1 degree centigrade. That's about 1 degree Fahrenheit. So if you wanted to know what the average temperature on planet Earth is from 1900 to 2008, it's 1 degree higher than it was in 1900 on average. And we're being told now that that's catastrophic, and my God, the end of the world is coming off of that 1 degree. That's called the big sell. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, non-state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending here are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at the ocean currents-fueled active 2008 hurricane season. Now, there's one thing here that everybody's in agreement over. The warmer the water gets, the more hurricanes you get off of it. The question we're trying to determine here and answer, does the CO2 being given off by the power plants and automobiles and all the rest of us out here working away, does that create the global warming that is causing the increased hurricanes? And then the next thing is, over the past 50 years, are we experiencing, because of this 1 degree Fahrenheit, this half a degree, or not quite half, but almost half a degree, centigrade rise in temperature, what does that have to do with it? Well, this outfit, called the Heartland Institute, is taking the other side of the argument over here. I like to get both sides of the argument so that I get some balance out of it. So if you'd like to get both sides of the argument, you can call the Heartland Institute. Now, this newsletter is $36 a year, 10 issues a year. Environment and Climate News is published 10 times a year by the Heartland Institute, and they're up in Chicago, Illinois. And the telephone number, let me give you the number. It's 312-377-4000. So you can see, you know, whether I'm lying to you or not. Just call them and tell them you want the February 2009 issue. I think they'll probably send you one. I mean, they'd like to sell you a subscription. I mean, that's their business. Okay. Now, they're not paying me to do this. I pick this up. I subscribe to it. I get a lot of newsletters and a lot of books that come in here to the law school. And we review these books. Lots of books we wouldn't tell you to read or buy or waste your time on. And that's because most of it's just trash. It's lies and trash and propaganda and, you know, a lot of crap out there. But once in a while, you find something that's really got some merit to it. And so, you know, like from time to time, I recommend The Privateer or The Money Changer or The International Forecaster or McIlvaney's Report and so on. These newsletters, these are what we call the underground press, and reporting to you the other side of the story. I mean, you guys know what Jim Lehrer told you yesterday. I mean, you saw that on PBS. Okay, what's the other side of the story? Who's taking the other side and telling you, well, wait a minute, let's think about this for a minute. Because you buy what you believe in. So pretty soon, you know, you get to believe in Chevrolet. Pretty soon, you're buying a Chevrolet rather than a Ford or a Dodge or a Plymouth or something else. All right, so let's jot this down. The Heartland Institute. Now, they got a webpage. It's www.heartland.org. So why don't you go to their website or give them a call. Remember that number now. It's 312-377-4000. Telling you what a copy of this, you want to see whether Gordon's lying to you or not. And let's go on to the next step over here, these normal long-term trends. Now, we have no well-founded physical reasons for believing Atlantic or other global basin hurricane frequency or intensity would necessarily change if global ocean temperatures were to continue to rise, and there has been little global temperature rise since 1998 anyway. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but starting in 1998, this global warming thing is reversed, and now it's cooling off. Now, going back, I think I've reported this a time or two, but going back here several hundred years, we have what we call the Little Ice Age, and then we have these various warming and cooling trends. There have been warming and cooling trends going on for a long time, several thousand years, and we know that by tree rings. See if there's moisture, you know, in the air, depending upon temperature and so on. And so they take a look at dendrochronology, tree rings, and then they plot back, you know, for a few hundred years. You can go back quite a few hundred years that way. And you can also have ice. And you take ice core samples, you know, out of glaciers, you know, and the ice sheets, you know, up in Greenland and so on. And then you can pretty well tell how much carbon dioxide was in the atmosphere at the time, how much oxygen was in the air at the time and so on. And so they go back and forth, and then they come up with a, you know, with what they call a picture, you know, a scientific picture here. And so there's scientists out there. There's lots of scientists out there, thousands and thousands of them, you know. And on this global warming thing, did you know that there's a lot of scientists out there that says just trash science, junk science they call it. And that there are warming trends and cooling trends, and right now we're not in a warming trend, we're in a cooling trend since 1998. I just wanted to report that to you in case you didn't know that. Now, if you want to know how that works, there's this National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I got a website. And they have satellites up in the air, and they're measuring the air temperature and the water temperature by satellite through ground stations that are all over the world. I don't know how many they got, but it's in the thousands of stations. I mean, all over the oceans. They got buoys. And they're not only measuring the temperature at the surface of the oceans, they're measuring it down way down deep, you know, so they can plot El Nino and La Nina. You know, so anyway, they're doing that, and they can do that to plus or minus 1/100th of 1 degree, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is where your tax dollars are going. So, you know, you're spending the money, you might as well get the science out of it. You're spending the money, and here's what your tax dollars are telling you. That since 1998, there is a cooling trend going on right now as I speak. From 1998 to 2008, the world isn't getting warmer. It already got warmer by about 1 degree Fahrenheit between 1900 and 1998. In that 98-year period, it got warmer. It got 1 degree warmer, and now it's cooling off. All right, so I'm just going to pass that one on to you. And that comes from your government. And by God, if you can't trust your government, now who can you trust? Now, going on here, in the quarter-century period from 1945 to 69, when the world was undergoing a weak cooling trend, the Atlantic Basin experienced 80 major Category 3, 4, or 5 hurricanes and 201 major hurricane days. In the subsequent 25-year period, that is 1970 to 1994, when the world was undergoing a general warming trend, there were only 38 major hurricanes and 63 major hurricane days. Ah, remember our question? All right, now, here's the answer to it. In the period from 1900 to 1949, there were 189, write this down, 189 named storms. Out of that 189, 101 of them were hurricanes. And out of those 101 hurricanes, 39 of them were Category 3, 4, or 5, called the monster storms. All right, got that down, 189, 101, and 39. All right. Now, in the last 50 years, you know, while all this global warming is going on, there were 167 named storms, or 22 fewer. As the world got warmer, you got 22 fewer storms. You got 85 hurricanes. So that's 16 fewer hurricanes in the same period of time. Of the intense hurricanes, the monster storms, there were 33. That's six less than there was in the previous 50 years. Right now, here's what this tells us. You know, Al Gore's a nice guy. And God love him. You know, we appreciate his writing. We appreciate his BS. But that's what it is. Al Gore and global warming is a bunch of BS. How do I know that? Because we got satellites up there in the sky here, boys and girls, that are measuring the world's temperature every day to plus or minus 1/100th of a degree, and it ain't getting warmer, it's getting colder. Well, over the last 10 years. Has there been a warming trend? Well, yeah, but it started in 1900. Boys and girls, automobiles haven't been putting out a hell of a lot of CO2 gas, you know, until after 1950. So, you know, to blame it on automobiles and blame it on power plants over here, you know, tain't so, it didn't happen. Now, I know that's what you believe, and that's what the big sell is all about. And here's what they're selling. They're selling global warming because they're going to put on a carbon tax of $1 a gallon for gasoline. Yeah. So get ready for this one here. It's coming. It ain't here yet, but it's coming. And you're going to pay $1 a gallon. Now, how are you going to pay that $1 a gallon? You're going to pay it with your electric bill every month. That's the way it's going to come down. We're going to close down the power plant. We are going to close down this coal-fired power plant. All right? That's what you want. That's what they want to sell you. And that's what you want to buy. And they're going to replace it over here with this wind generator, because that's what you want to buy. But they're going to charge the companies that produce that electricity an extra $1 a gallon. Say it's $1. They got a system set up over here. And if you're a power supplier over here and you're producing green energy, that's great. That's great. But see, they're not producing all the energy. They're just producing some of it. They don't pay any tax. And then the coal company over here, they got to pay this bigger carbon tax. Now, they're not going to sort out, you know, the electricity that comes over your line. They're not going to put in a second meter that sorts out the coal-fired electricity and the wind-generated electricity. So they're just going to put it all together. And certain companies are going to buy from other companies these carbon credits. Yeah, it's a bureaucratic program over here for charging you the equivalent of $1 a gallon for gasoline on these carbon credits. I just thought I'd report that to you. And the reason I like this publication here, it comes out from the Heartland Institute. You know, get that down, Heartland, HEARTLAND.org, Heartland. Go to their website and take a look at it. Because the people that are writing this, now these guys are scientists too. In fact, they got a page back here, and they've got a picture here, a bunch of guys on here. See if I can find their picture. If I can, I'm going to find it, and I'm going to tell you who some. Oh, here they are. Okay. You know, here's a guy named Arthur B. Robinson, Ph.D., you know, piled higher and deeper. He's the co-founder and professor of chemistry at Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine. And he's got PhD after his name, just like, you know, Al Gore and the rest of these guys over here. And he says global warming is poppycock. Got that? Not that there isn't global warming going on. I just reported to you that the world warmed up by 1 degree over the last 100 years. Now, we don't know what it's going to do over the next 100. See, what they're selling is, oh, my God, the world warmed up 1 degree over the last 100 years. And if it keeps doing that, and that's the key, and if it keeps doing that, it's going to get warmer. Let's see, when you go back here to about 1750 to about 1850, I think it was called the Little Ice Age, the world got colder. And in fact, you know, there was a time up until about 1975, when we were going through the cooling trend. They said, oh my God, if the world gets any colder over here, we're going to have this cold problem. Then about 1975 started warming up, and then Al Gore jumped on it, wrote a book, and said, hey, the world's getting warmer. Over long periods of time, you know, 100 years, 200, 300, 400 years, there's a fluctuation in the Earth's temperature. That's a given. We don't deny it. And furthermore, there was a warming trend that went up 4 degrees. Did you know that? Not just one. Went up four. It was about the 3rd century A.D. to about 1200. There was a period when it went up 4 degrees. My God, there wasn't any ice at all up in Greenland. I guess it was 4 degrees. Huh? I don't know if that's true or false. That's why they called it Greenland. Did you know that? See, there was a time when Greenland was green instead of white. And when the Vikings got there, in a period, you know, around 400, 500, 600 AD until about 1200, it was green. That's why they named it Greenland. They didn't call it White Land or Iceland. They called it Greenland. That's because they established colonies there. And then there was a cooling trend called the Little Ice Age from about 1200 to about 1850, I think it was, 1750 or 1850. I've got the number exactly in my brain here. And that's called the cooling trend. That's called the Little Ice Age. Oh, my God, it got cold. In fact, it got so bad over there that all the colonies that were established in Greenland died out because it froze up. You know, but they didn't change the name from Greenland to Whiteland or Iceland. You know, they just kept the name. Here's another guy. His name is Richard S. Lindzen, L-I-N-D-Z-E-N, Ph.D., one of the world's most experienced atmospheric physicists. Okay, he says that this is BS. Then there's Willie Soon, Ph.D., looks like a Chinaman here to me, a physicist. Oh, my God, a physicist at the Solar and Stellar Physics Division of the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. God, that's an impressive title. Just want to tell you here that there's some scientists out there that are telling us, hey, this Al Gore global warming, poppycock. All right. Now, I don't care what you believe. I'm not here to get you to write letters now to your senators and representatives. I just want to present information to you and tell you that, on the one hand, you're listening to your politicians and big business and so on, and they're telling you the world's getting hotter, caused by CO2, and the end of the world is coming. And we got to have these global carbon credits. And we got to join all these groups and organizations, and we're going to turn the thermostat down. I think that we'd be better off if we left the thermostat to God Almighty himself. And this idea that mankind can control the thermostat on planet Earth, I think, is one of these grand schemes like creating thermonuclear weapons of mass destruction. That just lets the genie out of the jar. And who's going to control the thermostat, the Russians, the Chinese, or the Americans? And for whose benefit? Hey, boys and girls, I ain't sure that there's anybody on planet Earth that ought to have his fingers on the thermostat of planet Earth. And the guy that has had his fingers on the thermostat over the last several thousand years, he ain't done too bad a job. I know he's an old fart, and he's an old fogey, and he's an old-timey god, and he's restrictive, and nobody likes him. But, you know, just looking at the thermostat sitting over there, it's, you know, getting along. We've been doing all right, haven't we? So I'm in favor, and my vote is for leave the thermostat in the hands of God, and let's all butt out. You know, you and me and Barack Obama and everybody else. Now there's a little bit more here. Warmer globe, fewer cyclones. Technological developments have enabled us to detect more hurricanes over the ocean than we were able to identify just a few decades ago. Therefore, the most reliable, long-period hurricane records we have are the measurements of U.S. landfalling tropical cyclones since 1900. So see the accompanying table. And although Atlantic sea surface temperatures increased by about 0.4 degrees centigrade between the two 50-year periods of 1900 in 1949 and 1959 through 2008, the frequency of U.S. landfall numbers actually shows a slight downward trend for the later period. It's not much of a downward trend, and it's probably a statistical foible. And that if you average this out over 200, 300, or 500 years, you probably wouldn't even have that kind of a variation. But hey, kids, wait a minute, hang on a second here. You know, they're telling us that the world is coming to an end, and that if we don't do this right now, there's no turning back, and God help us all. Well, okay, if you want to buy it, buy it. But it ain't so. That is not where reality is located. Global warming's here, and we're not quite sure what causes global warming, but we do know this. It isn't CO2. Got that? These warming trends and cooling trends, nobody knows what's causing them over the long, you know, the 4-degree rise in temperature in the warm period between 300 and 1280. Nobody knows what caused that. God turned the thermostat up. Actually, that's good for the world because it gives us longer growing seasons and we can grow more that way. And if it creates more CO2 in the air, now here's another thing for you to remember. Let me just tell you this. I've reported this once before. You know a volcano like Mount Pinatubo over in the Philippines? It blew up about 1995 or something like that, 94. Okay. That volcano put more CO2 into the atmosphere during its eruption than all of the activities of mankind on planet Earth from day one. Can you see how preposterous the CO2 argument is? Number one, CO2 is a gas that's necessary and needed for plant growth, and it's beneficial to plant growth. What would you think if your government said, oh my God, they're putting oxygen into the air. They're burning coal and they're putting oxygen in the air. Oh my God, the oxygen content's going up. We need to control oxygen. What the hell are you people talking about? Oxygen is a necessary ingredient for us. The more oxygen, the better. In fact, when we had more oxygen in the air, we all lived better and grew bigger. And so do the plants when they have more CO2. Now, if you're talking about, my God, they're putting carbon monoxide in the air, a toxic gas, well, maybe you'd have something to talk about. But CO2 isn't a toxic gas, it's a beneficial gas, for crying out loud. And it is true that the more coal you burn, the more carbon dioxide you put in the air. And the truth of the matter is, it's good for the growing season, and the warming trend would be better for Greenland. Well, it's true. It's not good for Miami and the Everglades. I don't deny that. And all you people that are living in the low-lying areas over there are going to get flooded out. But at the same time, Greenland turns green again. You gain more. If Antarctic continent melted off, you'd have more land mass and might have palm trees growing. Did you know there was palm trees growing down there in Antarctica at one time? Yeah, that's true. So when the world was warmer prior to the flood, I think we had a better program. And in any event, the guy that creates that better program, or the guy that controls the thermostat, it's my contention he hasn't been doing a bad job over the last few thousand years, and taking that away from him, I'm not sure is going to benefit any of us. And I'll guarantee you that paying an extra dollar a gallon for gasoline isn't going to benefit any of us little guys down here at the bottom, although it's going to benefit a lot of big guys at the top. I don't deny that. And the people that are selling us this big sell over here on hurricanes and the global warming and so on, there's money to be made out of global warming. And Al Gore, on the global warming kick, has made $100 million since he left office in 2000. Now, if you'd pay me $100 million, I'll write a book and I'll tell you whatever the hell you want to hear. And I think Al Gore is a whore for sale, and that he'll write anything that he's told to write for $100 million. My God, now that's hard to turn down. Some guy comes along and says, I'm going to pay you a lot of money to write a lot of lies in a book over here, and if you can sell this to people, we'll pay you well. And listen, that's what books are all about. Now, there's a balancing side to this. You know, there's the other side of the story. And the other side now comes from the Heartland Institute. Let me plug them one more time. And it's called heartland.org. It's www.heartland.org. That's the Heartland Institute. And they got a lot more stories in here. We'll take up another story next time. But they got a phone number up here. It's 312-377-4000. That's 312-377-4000. That's the Heartland Institute. And the publication that you're looking for is called The Environment and Climate News, put out 10 times a year by Heartland. Yeah, I'm running out of time here again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. Let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Okay, we're out of time. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.